welcome to the seventh episode of our podcast series, in which hot topics, including new initiatives and alternative viewpoints on patient engagement within the life sciences sector, will be covered. Although patient engagement is more and more common nowadays, it is absolutely crucial that it is also meaningful and sustainable. With this podcast series, we would like to contribute to achieving that goal. My name is Roger Lechtenberg, and I'm a senior partner and co-owner of Edmedicum. And today I'm sitting here with Pisana Ferrari, who's a well-recognized pulmonary hypertension patient advocate from Italy. And she started her advocacy work back in 2001 by founding the Italian PH Patient Association, AIPI. And a big journey followed after that, of course. So welcome, Pisana, to the show.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you for having me on this show. I'm delighted to be a part of this. Yes, my journey goes back quite a long time. I was diagnosed with pulmonary arterial hypertension, which is a rare form of pulmonary hypertension, in 1988. So that's 36
years. That's even a long time before that.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
And at the time, there was literally no information about this condition. We're talking about pre-internet times, just to give an idea. There were no treatments. It was very difficult to meet any other patients because of the rarity of the condition, and there were no patient associations. So I felt very lonely and lost. And I have to say that what really made a huge difference in my life was when the US Patient Association was set up in the early 90s, which actually coincides with the rise of internet. So at last, here were some useful resources, and most importantly, opportunities to meet with other patients. So actually, the first patients I met were only online, and it was 6 years after my diagnosis. And it was only 12 years after my diagnosis that I actually met any patients in person, when I started being looked after in Bologna, where the first pulmonary hypertension expert center in Italy was being set up.
So The catalyst for you to become really active as a patient advocate, basically, and founding the organization in Italy, is really the belief that the need for these kind of organizations that need to be there to get connected to other patients.
Absolutely.
To talk, education. Absolutely. All those kind of elements.
Absolutely, that was the catalyst, and I met other patients in Bologna. We all talked about this. We all had the same problem. And we decided together to found the Italian Patient Association. So that was the start of my career as a patient advocate, let's say. And I'm happy to say that IP is doing very well. It's a thriving and very active association with a lot of useful services for patients.
Okay. Not only. And I will come to that in a second as well in our talk, of course. But you also moved into Europe more, is that correct? So
yes.
So expanded from the Italian work that you did, being a founding member of the European organization. Can you tell me a bit more about how that came about, basically?
Well, that came about through the initiative of patients' associations in the north of Europe, France, Germany. France and Germany were the earliest in Europe. So after the US, it was France and Germany. And they decided to get a few patient leaders together. And we met in Vienna during the European Respiratory Society Congress in 2003. And we decided to found a PHA Europe. So it started off as a very small organization with just we were 8 or 9 people at the time. And it's also grown considerably. So IP became a founding member of PHA Europe.
You say it's grown since it started in 2003. How big is, what kind of size are we talking about? How big is PHA Europe now?
Yeah, it's 33 associations across all of Europe, from north to south, east to west.
Yeah, so everybody basically
it's very broad.
Joined the European initiative, basically.
It's very broad, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you look at the work from 2003 onwards, from the European side of things, what were the most remarkable things that happened over that period of time? What you would consider were the association and also the Italian one, of course, in particular. But what were the things that where you say, hey, here we have really contributed to achieving something that is meaningful for patients and for caregivers that live with people that live with that disease. Can you elaborate a bit on that? You know, what are the most key elements there?
Well, I think the key element is that from zero associations in when I was diagnosed, there are about 90 today all over the world. So the actual patient association movement has more power.
A big flight.
I mean, it really took off with a bang. And they all started working in their own countries for in advocacy, awareness raising, and so on. And all this led to patients being more active and getting involved with national governments. And then from then on to the European institutions, in the case of Europe. And gradually, there's been an increase, and I've seen it in my own journey, of patients being included in decisions concerning health policies. Okay. So the most important development possibly is the fact that two patient representatives were included in the development of the new clinical guidelines for pulmonary hypertension. Now, this is a protocol that is followed by, it's not compulsory, but these are very important recommendations. They're evidence-based. And the fact that two patients were included, I myself was included, which was a huge honor, that I think really is the, how would you say it? I mean, the most important achievements, because sure. We were able to have a say and include some important patient insights and some points that are important for patients, which doctors, no matter how dedicated and competent, may not see.
They have a different perspective, isn't it? You know, the doctor is, of course, there to hopefully give the best possible care to the patient and to support everything. But they look at the disease from a different perspective than you living with the disease. And the same is true for regulators or for HTA bodies. The patient perspective just needs to be part of this. And so it's really great that you were able to join and participate in these kind of things and achieve something there.
I have other examples that are just as important, because now patient representatives are being included in different capacities in the work of scientific societies. And I'll just mention the European Society for Cardiology, European Respiratory Society, European Lung Foundation, the European Reference Network for Rare Lung Diseases, the European Society for Organ Transplant, and the World Symposium on Pulmonary Hypertension. I'll give you two examples.
Sure.
For the first time ever, patients were allowed in the European Society for Organ Transplant only a few years ago. And last year, a patient was actually nominated honorary co-chair of a congress of all the most important transplant. And it was, again, it was me, but it's not important for me. It's important because it sets an important precedent for all the patients. And the other example is the World Symposium on Pulmonary Hypertension, which is the most important scientific event in the field, where there's a task force on patient perspectives, of which I'm a part of with other patients and doctors. And it's the first one that's going to be presenting its findings at the Congress in Barcelona end of June. And at the previous Congress, we were the task force to present. Just to give you an idea.
And it's always bad to be at the last one, the last thing to present in a conference, right? Because half of the conference is gone.
By then, a lot of people had gone. So
exactly.
So that was 5 years ago. So in these five years, all of this has happened.
It made a difference then.
It made a difference.
Cool.
So patients are now being considered partners. And there's a new definition coming up. It's experts by experience.
You share a couple of great ideas and are great examples of what was achieved over the time. That's great. I'm sure there are still also big gaps that still need to be tackled from a patient perspective, I would say, or at least maybe not tackled, but at least there are challenges still most likely that where you would like or you would like to see improvements happening. Can you share a little bit your thoughts on that element?
Yeah, indeed, it's absolutely true. So huge progress has been made in the field. So there are now 11 approved treatments in Europe, and expert centers have been set up. There are clinical guidelines. Surgery techniques have improved in transplant and other surgical options. But there's still no cure. So survival has improved and quality of life. But ultimately, if patients don't have a lung transplant in the case of pulmonary arterial hypertension, or pulmonary endarterectomy or balloon pulmonary angioplasty for chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension, unfortunately, there's nothing that can be done. So patients are still dying. And also there's a lot to be done in terms of providing the kind of holistic care that's needed, because this is a disease that has a huge impact on family life, professional life, so also financial, social life, and psychological. Another big challenge is the delay to diagnosis, because the symptoms are very common. I mean, common in the sense that common to other conditions.
Sure.
And it's still a disease that is not very well known, even among the medical profession.
Any particular things that are top of mind, what could be done to improve this?
I think we really need to continue to work a lot on awareness raising it, that's the main driver.
You were also starting the Alliance of Pulmonary Hypertension, right? Quite recently. And am I right that is really to also support this, actually? So to get more exchange on knowledge and expertise across the pulmonary hypertension community. Is that one of the key reasons why this initiative was started?
Absolutely, absolutely, spot on. The idea was to, it's an educational project. The idea is to share knowledge and expertise, because it's true that what I just said before, that there's been huge progress in the field, and there are hundreds of articles, guidelines, researchers, surveys, registries, a wealth of information that is scattered all over the world in different websites, journals, and so on. So we had the idea of creating a dedicated hub where we could collect this information and share it so that people could actually see what's going on in the rest of the world, because we all tend to only see what's happening in our own country, but there's so much out there. So that's the idea behind it. The idea was to the sharing of knowledge about pulmonary hypertension, which is a way to create awareness, but also to educate patients. You know, patients have gone from being passive subjects, just accepting what was told to them, to being more proactive in their care. And I think, you know, the rise of internet has helped with that.
Sure.
Patients are more informed. I'm not necessarily better informed, but they're more informed.
Sure.
So they will arrive at a visit already with some knowledge, and it's no longer possible just to tell them what to do. Patients want to understand.
They won't want to accept it anymore.
They won't accept
saying,
it anymore.
Well, you move left, move right. No, it's...
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, in some cultures, it's still like that, and patients are intimidated by doctors. But overall, we are moving really towards a more patient-centered care. Mm-hmm. Where the patient is a partner again. I mean, the guidelines for pulmonary hypertension specifically speak of partnership with patients.
Okay. That's
so
nice.
I think this is the way we're moving in this direction. Now, it may take time, and again, there may be cultural differences and so on, but patients are now increasingly active in their care and increasingly active in advocating for their care, also through patient associations.
And it was very hardly needed, right? It was very important that this happened, because it wasn't optimal how it was before, clearly not. And so it makes a lot of sense. Any future plans with this new alliance that you formed, the platform, beyond simply informing people and providing education, and maybe then creating with that some more awareness? Any other ideas what you want to potentially explore?
Well, I think, you know, the pulmonary hypertension knowledge sharing platform is a work in progress.
Yes.
So it's never going to be finished.
Yeah.
It depends on the contributions from the community. So it's not as if it's going to end ever. It's just going to continue evolving.
Sure.
We're
sure.
building on the knowledge base. I mean, now we have over 500 resources online in different formats and languages.
Nice.
We have The news section has over 15 articles per month, so one every 2 days, because that's something else that was missing, a kind of a news agency for pulmonary hypertension. Mm-hmm. We've organized 6 webinars last year that have had almost 3,000 views. And we've had 7,000 views of the website with 2,000 visitors from 68 countries. So the numbers are good. So there's of course, margin for improvement always. But as I said, it's a work in progress. So what we plan to do in the future is continue building the knowledge base, mm-hmm. promoting it, sharing it, because the website is not enough, as we know. So we promote all of this information all through social media and other communication channels, through our webinars. And we also hope that through this knowledge sharing, we will be able to organize some collaborative projects with the community. Ideally, I think, you know, together we can do so much more. We are already collaborating on many different things. For example, World Pulmonary Hypertension Day has become a global event. It started in 2012. And I think there were 80 patient associations celebrating it last year. So it's been a huge success.
So maybe moving a little bit away from per se your own things that you've done until this moment in the world of patient advocacy, but maybe looking a little bit more towards the future. Is there something what patient advocates should strive towards, or what the society should strive towards, that is different than what we are currently doing together with patient groups and patient advocates?
Well, I think the outlook is promising, because despite being a rare disease, there's still a lot of research going on in the field of pulmonary hypertension on new treatments, not only, but also on improving modes of administration of existing approved drugs. So that's something where we could have more of a say, for example, in clinical trials, being involved right up front from design through to the whole way through.
Not happening at this moment,
It's not happening enough. No, definitely not. Okay. So that's definitely one field. The other field is to continue to be involved in clinical guidelines and important scientific events, because those are all ways in which we can promote, advocate for unmet needs and things like that. And so also there's a lot of work on transplant surgery. There's a lot of research going on machine perfusion for suboptimal organs, which can be reused, regenerative medicine. Xenotransplantation is another field where there's a lot happening. So that would help to make more organs available, because one of the very big problems, of course, is access to transplant. There's a huge organ shortage everywhere. That's also something where we can work more through governments to get them to promote organ donation, perhaps make it easier for ordination. You know, there's a big debate between opt-in and opt-out.
Sure, yeah. In every country, yeah.
Whether it brings more organs or not, and so on. So I think that's also a field where we can push with governments to make them... we can also get together to do things together. And I'm very happy to say that there's now an European Transplant Patient Organization, which is cross-disease, cross-country. Okay. Nice. Which can do a lot in that, because, yes, it's different organs, but we all have the same problem. I mean, the same problems. The issues are the same.
Of course, so, yes.
And I think, you know, the what I was saying before, the patient association movement, because I see it as a movement, these 90 patient associations are now a power that has to be reckoned with. They're a force that has to be reckoned with. So, you know, if you think that 35 years ago there weren't any, I think that's... We have collective power that we can perhaps leverage better or more.
So, Pisana, I think we are pretty much already at the end of our talk, which is great. And I think you've shown over the years that you've achieved a tremendous amount of success, I would say, with all your activities. And a very motivating personality, I would say, and
a
creative personality driving things. And that's also what I felt when I talk to you today, so that's really great. Is there anything that we missed talking about that you wanted to share also at this moment before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I want to say a few words about the importance of patient-doctor communication and how I think in my personal experience, I've been very fortunate to have very empathic, kind, and sensitive doctors who were able to, you know, give me it was a terrible diagnosis and my journey has been far from easy. But I think even bad news can be communicated in a way that is empathic and sensitive. And I think that's a message that I always try to drive home with doctors, that communication skills are important and they can really make a difference, and that you should always leave some hope, even if it's a very little, tiny little bit, because patients can live on that and they will hope beyond, beyond any possibility of actually making it. They will keep hoping. I was diagnosed 36 years ago when there were no drugs. I was pregnant at the time. And I never thought I would see my daughter even get through school. She's now completed her studies. She's got a career. I have two grandchildren. So there's always hope. And at the time, there was no hope. So something will come up. Things are coming up, in fact, in pulmonary hypertension. There are new drugs coming out soon. So we need to keep fighting.
So maybe can I ask you one question then? Because empathy and empathic communication is something that is very close to my heart due to other things that I'm doing in my life as well, besides working for AdMedicum. What would you suggest would be part of the solution here? So of course it's very true. It's important to communicate in the right way, with the right messaging and the right feeling around that, and really listening to the patient instead of just sending a message, etc. But it's also, I think, proven that it's very difficult to change this kind of communication issues that you are describing, or communication challenges. So would that be something that is a role for patient organizations to educate the physician community? Yeah, educate is maybe already the wrong word.
Well, I see it not so much as education, but raising awareness of the impact that communication
of course
has.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's a nice way of putting it. So I'll give you one example. 2 years ago, I was asked by the European Society for Organ Transplant to organize a workshop in Rome on patient-doctor communication. There were two of us, an expert in the field and myself, and we actually put the doctors through role playing where they were the patients, and it was a very interesting to see that actually they were not fully aware of what it means not to be listened to, or when somebody's distracted during a visit. It was when they were in that situation that was it was very interesting to do this role playing.
Thank you once more for your time today. It was a great conversation, I think, and great to see your insights in how everything started in especially your field, pulmonary arterial hypertension, but also showcasing what you can achieve really by doing something with a very long journey and see what you all achieved, not only you, but also your fellow peers in the field. And I think that is also maybe a little bit of hope that you give to other patient advocates.
I hope so.
To see what you can achieve there, right? So thank you very much again.
And I hope so. Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure. And thank you again for having me.
Finally, I would like to thank also our listeners. I hope this 7th episode was informative and inspirational. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform and stay tuned for the next episode.